Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Listening to another episode of the Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, Kevin Cunningham. This show today, just solely going to be about free agency, once again, through July 6th. It's currently 11:30 a.m. Central Time, July 6th. So, you know, everything that I discuss is going to be about what's gone on up until this point. After the first day or two, you know, I went through, you know, stuff like the Spurs re-signing Kawhi Leonard and the Bulls re-signing Jimmy Butler and, you know, all the stuff that went on over the first day, 2 days. But this show, the way I kind of have it mapped out, it's going to be a lot of Western Conference talk. I'll talk a little bit about the East to start. During my show, actually, for day two or three of free agency, whatever it was, the Bucks got Greg Monroe, and I'll talk about that to lead the show because I didn't get to talk about it before. But if you head over to theredlightsportsnetwork.com, you can check out all of our archived podcasts and blogs. One of the podcasts up there is one that has me on it from the Red Light Sports Ramble, the number one show, you could say, on the Red Light Sports Network with Troy and Evan, our CEO, COO, the head honchos of the network. And so I was a guest on their show, got to talk about Greg Monroe, what it means for the Bucks, what it means for the NBA, what, you know, it means for the future of Milwaukee. And that's what I'll do to kind of open up the show today before getting into the Western Conference and LaMarcus Aldridge, DeAndre Jordan, where they ended up, stuff like that. But again, head over to the redlightsportsnetwork.com, check out all of our podcasts and blogs. I've been doing my college football research the last few days and have all my notes written down on, you know, which teams are going to be relevant, who to look for, players to look for, you know, each team's schedule, stuff like that, teams to look for the college football playoff this upcoming season. So again, over at theredlightsportsnetwork.com, I'll be throwing up a blog daily starting probably today, either today or tomorrow, for the next week or so, about each of the major Power 5 conferences and just what teams to look for, who I expect to win those conferences. So I'm not just a talking basketball head. You know, this show's not just about the NBA, but college basketball, high school recruiting, stuff like that. But I also love college football as well. Obviously, the NFL has its place as far as my pleasures are concerned. But going forward, Milwaukee Bucks signed Greg Monroe a few days ago to a three-year, it's around $50 million. From the numbers that I'm looking at the Bucks team salary right now. And from the looks of it, let's see, the first 2 years will be about $32 million, and then basically $17 million for the third year if he opts in 2017-18 season. So it's a two-year deal with a third-year player option, technically. So it's basically 3 years, $49 million, a little more than that. But so, you know, around 16, 17 a year. This next season, 15.6. Next season, 16.3. The season after that, 17.1. So that I'll kind of get into with this is that the Bucks signed Greg Monroe. And Greg Monroe isn't LaMarcus Aldridge. He isn't Kevin Love. You know, he's not a top-tier power forward, big, so to say, that can play the center if he needed to. Kind of like what LaMarcus, I mean, maybe LaMarcus will play more four and Timmy will play the five in San Antonio. But in any case, he's a big that can play the 4-5 spot. And he's a guy that's not a star. You know, he's not going to consistently get you 20 and 10, 20 and 12, but he will give you 16 and 10, 15 and 9, 15 and 10. You know, he's consistent in that sense. There was a stat, I don't think it was just overall rebounds per game, but it was in a more advanced metric in terms of rebounding is concerned last season. And the Bucks ranked 24th. And so you bring a guy that's obviously you're going to sit him at the five. he's going to be the starting center for the Bucs day one of next season. And is he enormous? Is he the best rim protector? No, I believe he's 6'10", but he's tough. And he gets, like I said, 10 rebounds a game. So it's fills up one need for the Bucks extremely well. You know, is that last season they weren't the greatest rebounding team in the league. They were the second best defensive team in the league. But as far as rebounding, they weren't even, you know, mediocre. They were below average. And what you're going to get from Monroe, it's, you know, it's not paying him off last year's production. I mean, he entered the NBA as a 20-year-old, and he averaged 9-7. Next season, he averaged 15-9. Season after that, 16-9. Season after that, 15-9. Last season, 15-10. So you know what you're getting. Turned 25. He turned 25 on June 4th, so basically a month ago. He's 25 years old. This deal, he's going to be 25, 26, 27. The peak of his career. So what you're going to have is, again, another 15-10 around that level. And he's going to get more chances for rebounds just based off common sense, just because the Bucks are a better team than the Pistons are. Better defensive team in particular. I mean, they are a better team, period. But defensively, if you have more opportunities for rebounds on the defensive end because your defense is strong as a team, you're going to have more opportunities to rebound, like I just said. So he's, you know, he's going to be around that 15-9, 15-10, 16-10 mark. There's no, you know, there's no questioning that. He's going to shoot close to 50% from the field. He's not an offensive monster, but in terms of post-up plays per game, he averaged 8 points per game just based on post-ups alone last season, Greg Monroe. The Bucks as a team averaged just under that. It was like 7 points something. I forgot the exact number. But they averaged 7 points something points per game based on post plays. Solely going to a guy inside and letting him go to work in the post. Greg Monroe averaged 8 last season. That's another need for the Bucks that was filled by the signing. So he fills the needs. He's not a, you know, superstar defensive center. But realistically, I mean, fans were talking about, you know, maybe Tyson Chandler, maybe Robin Lopez. DeAndre Jordan was, you know, a clear long shot because he just basically wanted to stay out west. But so, those guys are defensive centers. And what you have in Monroe is an offensive-minded center that still rebounds. You know, he's not a Bargnani that's averaging 16-6 because he sits out, you know, 15 feet away from the basket and can't bang with bigs. Monroe is physical. In terms of blocks per game, last year he averaged 0.5. Again, he's not a defensive threat. For his career, 0.6. He's a guy that's going to play 31, 32, 33 minutes a game. He's just going to be a big that Milwaukee needed. Offensively, they needed a guy that they could punch the ball down to, if need be. That was a, you know, concern among fans was when they did trade Brandon Knight, which I thought was the right deal. Ultimately, you don't want to pay Brandon Knight $14 a year because I don't want him to be a starting point guard for my team. I'm a Celtics guy. But I don't want to pay Brandon Knight starting point guard money if I don't think he's a starting point guard in the league. I think he's an excellent sixth man. But I don't want to pay my starting point guard $14 million a year to average 5 assists a game. Points with that, then that's a different story. You average 16? No. You know. But so I thought it was right to get rid of Brandon Knight, but people were questioning because of the offense. Well, where is it going to come from? Well, now you have a guy on the block that you can dump the ball down to that can somewhat find shooters on the outside if he needs to. He is a plus passer out of the post. Chris Middleton, the Bucks just signed for $14 million a year for 5 years. That was an unbelievable deal. If he can find Chris Middleton, if he can find Grievous Vasquez, if he can find O.J. Mayo at times, Jabari Parker at times. You know, there aren't a lot of shooters in Milwaukee. Rashad Vaughn is supposed to come in and be able to shoot it at least well. There aren't a ton of shooters, but Mayo is serviceable. Grievous Vasquez is serviceable. Chris Middleton's a great three-point shooter, 40%. They've got some guys that can shoot. Giannis reportedly has somewhat changed his stroke, and you know, people around the Bucks are saying that they love it. So maybe he'll be a little better shooter. I would assume he'll be at least a little better than what he's been shown in the past. But so Monroe just gives you another option offensively. Now, you know, where this fits in big picture. Big picture for the Bucks this next year, are they going to compete with the Cavs and make it a 7-game series and possibly get to the finals? No. But they're going to be an incredible defensive team again. And offensively, if Monroe gives you something, which he will, in the post, a legitimate big, to throw at opposing teams big, then, you know, the offense will be fine. Pete with the Bulls? Absolutely. To me, the Bulls didn't get better this offseason. They lost their head coach. Jimmy Butler got paid. Joakim Noah is just going to keep deteriorating. The Bulls are what they are. They're a really solid team. They're not great. They're not average. They're really solid. They're a good team. The Bulls will be a good team next year. The Hawks will be a good team next year. They won't be great. They're not going to duplicate last year's regular season success. Realistically, in the East, you've got a bunch of good teams. There are a lot of good teams next year in the East. The gap from the West to the East is definitely closing, in my opinion. The West is still easily better. Easily. But in the East, Cleveland's an elite team. After Cleveland, you've got Atlanta. Like I said, they're a good team. Chicago is going to be a good team. Washington, they should be good, assuming they're healthy. They lose Pierce, that doesn't help. Toronto will be a good team. Boston, they'll be average. Again, I'm a Celtics guy, but I'm realistic. They'll be fine. They'll be okay. Miami should be a, you know, Wade's going to play 50 games, but that's already, you know, assumed. You got, realistically, you have seven teams that should make the playoffs in the East. Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, Toronto, Washington, Milwaukee, Miami. That eighth spot, maybe it goes to Boston. Brooklyn, I highly doubt. You're going to lose Joe Johnson. Deron Williams is just seemingly getting worse. Brook Lopez, Thaddeus Young got paid. They're not, you know, they're not going to win more than 38 games next year, which they won this past year and still won the 8th seed. Indiana could sneak in there. Charlotte could sneak in there. Orlando could start to become average as opposed to bad. But so the East just has a bunch of good teams, and Milwaukee fits right in there, adding Monroe, keeping Middleton, getting Grievous Vasquez. They're going to be a good team. Again, compete with Cleveland? Not really. Could they seriously fight for the 2 seed? I legitimately think they can. And what it also means is that you look at these players, and not just with Greg Monroe, but LaMarcus Aldridge, DeAndre Jordan, they don't care about the market size for cities. It doesn't make a difference to them. LaMarcus Aldridge goes to San Antonio. San Antonio is not a big city. That's a smaller market. And you're winning, you're going to get recognized. You're going to get ads. You're going to get shoe deals. You're going to get whatever. It doesn't matter where you play. Kevin Durant's one of the most recognizable people on the planet. He plays in Oklahoma City. It doesn't matter where you play. If you're great and you're winning, it doesn't matter where you play. Greg Monroe went to Milwaukee over Los Angeles, New York. LaMarcus Aldridge went to San Antonio over L.A. Quite the difference. It's because San Antonio is a better basketball team. DeAndre Jordan leaving L.A. for Dallas. I mean, Dallas is, you know, Dallas is nice from what I've heard. But you're the Clippers, you're, you know, you'll never surpass the Lakers in terms of popularity, but you're still easily the number one team in town just based on performance, your team in general. You leave a really good situation for Dallas, and, you know, it's not about the market. Monroe, Aldridge, they just left for better teams. DeAndre just wanted a bigger role. Wanted to stay out west. So it just goes to show what the league is like now as opposed to 10, 15 years ago. LeBron James didn't leave Miami to go to Cleveland because of Cleveland being a better place than Miami. Outside of basketball, within basketball, it absolutely is. Miami was a deteriorating, old team with LeBron. You go to Cleveland, a bunch of young players that are only going to get better, plus LeBron. Cleveland is just a better basketball situation. Realistically, you know, they had one of the brighter futures if you bring in Love to that situation for a team in the NBA last year before LeBron went there because of the young guys that they had. You know, so it wasn't just because Cleveland was LeBron's hometown that he went back, but because he knew that this team was only going to get better. And he would not have to score 30 a night, 27 a night, for that team to win. Now, in the finals, you know, different story because the team was halfway dead. But he went to Cleveland because it's a better basketball situation than it was in Miami going forward. It wasn't initially when he was with Cleveland. No one wanted to go there because it was Cleveland. Dan Gilbert didn't want to pay extra money for guys to go there. Pat Riley was willing to. LeBron went to Cleveland for basketball reasons. Better basketball team. LaMarcus Aldridge went to the Spurs because they're a better basketball team. Greg Monroe going to the Bucks instead of the Knicks or the Lakers because they're a better basketball team. Doesn't matter on the market share size. The Bucks, and I thought that a free agent like Monroe, who's not an A free agent, but a B-plus free agent, he's a really good player. He's not a star in the league, but he's a really good player. Choosing Milwaukee over big market teams or teams, you know, that have established something already, better than a 6 seed in the East. I thought it was going to take 2-3 years for a free agent like Greg Monroe to choose Milwaukee over other teams. The fact that him and his agent decided to go to Milwaukee is because Kidd has installed a system that the young players buy, and people know that this team plays real defense, and they have a bunch of young stars that are only going to get better. I'm 25 years old. Why would I not join that core and fill a perfect need for them? It's a great situation for Monroe. It's a great situation for the Bucks. Like I said, I think they can legitimately compete for a number two seed in the East next season. I would still probably take Atlanta and Chicago just because they've done it before. And I really believe in Fred Hoiberg. And I think the Bulls' talent at this stage is in their career, player-wise. Guys like Rose, you don't know what you're getting. But if he is healthy-ish, you know you're getting a really good player. He's not great anymore, but he's still pretty good. Jimmy Butler, really good player. Pau Gasol, really good player. Joakim Noah, again, he's deteriorating, but he's still good. The Bulls still have a pretty damn good team. They just have a new head coach, which I believe in. So I think the Bulls will compete for the number two seed. I think the Hawks will still compete for the number two seed, even though they lost Carroll. Play a brand of basketball that will lead them to a successful year. And more than just five seed, six seed successful. They're still going to be difficult to defend. They're going to beat up on most teams in the East. And even against the West last year, they did a good job beating the West. So I think Atlanta, Chicago is still up there in the East. But Milwaukee's, I would not bet against Milwaukee being the number two seed in the East next year. I don't think it'll happen, but, you know, I'd be willing to bet against Miami. I'd be willing to bet against Toronto, Washington. I think Atlanta, Chicago, and Milwaukee will make up 2, 3, 4 in whatever order in the East next season. Cleveland at the top. Then you got teams like Toronto, Washington, Miami, maybe Boston, filling out 5 through 8. So, Monroe, I think it's huge, not just for the Bucks this next season, the next 2, 3 seasons that he's there, because he fills such a need. He is a really good player. He gives them a puncher's chance at, you know, getting to the Eastern Conference Finals now. I think that's huge for a very young core. But not just right now, but for the future going forward. Players will want to come to Milwaukee because of the team that they have and the defense that they play and that the head coach that they have, that the players are willing to buy in and play their butts off to play defense and be successful. What it means long term is the players will want to go to Milwaukee. Greg Monroe wanted to go to Milwaukee. That's the biggest win in getting Greg Monroe. It's not just filling the perfect need at center, which I think he realistically probably is for this team. But it's guys wanting to go to Milwaukee in the future to play with this young core that should only get better. So, I spent a lot more time on Greg Monroe than I thought I would, but nevertheless, 20 or so minutes down, 25 minutes down, got another 20 to go. And so, other than Greg Monroe and the Bucks, which is 3, 4 days old, in any case, the other deals, I'm going to stick with the East for just a second, then I'll transition out West and talk about LaMarcus Aldridge, DeAndre Jordan. But so Cleveland, still in talks with Tristan Thompson. I'm assuming that'll get done because LeBron wants it to get done, so it will. But so they'll be keeping all their guys. They're also interested in Joe Johnson. That can happen only cap-wise because if they got rid of a guy like Varejao, who's making $9 million a year next year, they need to unload some cap, but also Brendan Haywood's contract. There's something there where if they dish that out, his contract has been elevated because of other teams spending money. It's not 100% clear to me why, but that's the gist of it. But so Cleveland could ultimately, I guess, make it happen, getting Joe Johnson and, you know, sticking him wherever they want to, I guess. He'd be a starter, maybe coming off the bench behind Shumpert. I don't know. But in any case, Cleveland's interested in Joe Johnson. They're going to be the top team in the East next year. They're probably my favorites for next season to win the whole thing. I still think it's them and Golden State. I'll tell you why in a second. But the one deal that this free agency period that has really stood out to me that's actually been egregious is Reggie Jackson to Detroit, 5 years, $80 million. That was just signed, I think, last night, either last night or this morning. Again, Reggie Jackson, 5 years, $80 million. He's making $16 million a year in Detroit. Reggie Jackson is a solid player. He's, I would say, barely above average. He's not worth $16 million a year. I have defended basically every single deal that has been made so far in free agency because of the cap jump, and not just blindly, but taking it in proportion to what players now make. Tyson Chandler for $13 a year. Well, you know what? When Tyson Chandler is making a sixth, a seventh of your cap, 2 years, 3 years from now, that's not that bad a deal. You're paying your starting center, you know, your sixth, seventh best player money on your team. That's what $13 million a year will become. But so Reggie Jackson, you're paying him like your starting point shooting guard, whatever you want to call him. You're paying him to start and be really good. Not even necessarily really good, but certainly productive and a good player, which he could turn into, paying him based on the fact that he will. And he's never going to be fantastic. So you're basically betting on him turning into what you potentially maxes out as being. And you're paying him that as opposed to a guy like Chris Middleton, let's say, that has a higher ceiling than Reggie Jackson, easily. Chris Middleton's making $14 million a year. Reggie Jackson's making $16 million. That's just a comparison that, you know, can't be overstated. Reggie Jackson's really the only deal that I've had a true problem with so far in free agency this year. Also in the East, this is the last team I'll talk about in the East. Indiana got Rodney Stuckey, 3 years, $21 million, $7 million. He's a good player, $7 million a year, cap jumping, absolutely worth it. Indiana wants to play faster. They've, you know, Hibbert going to L.A., David West leaving. You add Monte Ellis, you add Rodney Stuckey. And Indiana's obviously looking to play smaller and play faster. That's, it is what it is. Indiana's bigs, that's a different story. You got Miles Turner, you got Iamihime. That's, I don't know who else they really have there in Indiana, bigs-wise. They'll be a below-average team, but in the East, maybe they could be the 8 seed. That's their ceiling to me. But so, going out West. Golden State, a couple of these things I've already mentioned, like Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green. But so, going out West, Draymond Green, I've also talked about, 5 years, $82 million, a little over $16 million a year. I think it's absolutely worth it, again, with the cap jumping. If you were $16 million a year when your cap is at 68, he's probably not worth basically a fourth of your cap. He's not. But years two, years three, years four, years five in his deal when he's reaching his prime, worth that. Absolutely. That was a good deal for Golden State. They've basically kept all of their guys from last year. They have to probably unload David Lee, which, if you watched Golden State at all last year, you realized how much David Lee made a difference for them. Against the Cavs, he actually had a couple games where he was really productive, but in the end, he's not anything for them anymore. So that's how they'll make everything work cap-wise, but Golden State's going to be back. They're the top team in the West to me. Cleveland's the top team in the East to me. It's fairly clear. Because you start looking at the rest of these Western Conference teams that made the playoffs last year, and you think to yourself, like, which of these teams is actually going to overtake Golden State next year? If you run through the list, I'm going to skip Houston. because Houston's the one outlier. You know, and I'll talk about San Antonio too. But the Clippers, you added Paul Pierce. That's really cool. Again, I'm a Celtics guy. I started liking the Celtics because of Paul Pierce, you know, 15 or so years ago. So I love Paul Pierce. There's no denying. But I know what Paul Pierce is now in his career. Yes, I saw him in the playoffs. Yes, he was great in the playoffs, not just from a game shot winning, you know, perspective, but because of his percentages just all went up in the playoffs. Didn't really care much about the regular season, cared about the playoffs. He was a difference maker. But in the Clippers coming off the bench, Pierce, really good add. Problem is you lose DeAndre Jordan. That's going to sting. Now, DeAndre Jordan and Paul Pierce, you could make the argument that in the postseason, next season, and I'm cringing just saying this, that Paul Pierce may have the same impact as DeAndre Jordan in the postseason. Obviously different players, different positions, different, you know, they impact the game differently, but you could make the argument at best that Paul Pierce has the difference maker potential of DeAndre Jordan in the postseason for a series against the team. Let's just say that's true. Then the Clippers washed in that retrospect. Then they're as good a team. You're trading your starting center for a backup, you know, three, or maybe he does start now, but regardless, I would rather have DeAndre Jordan than Paul Pierce. But in any case, if the Clippers are as good as they were a year ago, they're still probably not good enough to beat Golden State. Can they? Sure. I would favor Golden State over the Clippers, even if the Clippers are as good as they were a year ago. If the two had met, if the Clippers had closed out Houston, which, again, they couldn't. They were up 3-1. And they couldn't. That's saying something. But so I think Golden State, I think the Clippers got worse this offseason. I think Golden State easily over the Clippers next year. Portland was the 4 seed last year. Portland lost everybody minus Damian Lillard. I think they still have Myers Leonard. Myers Leonard can actually shoot the 3-ball, for those that don't know. But he's going to be a solid player in the league. But they lost everyone. You lose Wesley Matthews. You lose Nicholas Batum. You lose LaMarcus Aldridge. You lose Robin Lopez. Portland's not making the playoffs next year. That was the 4 seed. Memphis was the 5 seed out west. Memphis isn't getting any better. They're still an offensive anemic. They're not beating Golden State. They can pound them out for a couple games, defensively and on the block, but they're not beating Golden State in a 7-game series. San Antonio was the 6. I'll get into them. Dallas was the 7. Dallas, I mean, you had DeAndre Jordan, but you lost Tyson Chandler. DeAndre Jordan is going to make more of an impact than Tyson Chandler. You added Wesley Matthews. You lost Monte Ellis. Wesley Matthews coming off an Achilles injury. Maybe he's slightly better than Monte Ellis next season because of him coming off an injury. If he wasn't, I fully believe Wesley Matthews is a better player. But coming off an injury, first year, new team, don't know the system. I don't know. Dallas is also interested in Jeremy Lin. Whoop-dee-doo. So Dallas, again, are they going to beat Golden State in a 7-game series by adding Wesley Matthews and DeAndre Jordan? But again, do you lose Monte Ellis and Tyson Chandler? I don't think so. I think they're still a good team out west, great team in the east, but they're not pushing Golden State in a 7-game series. Cleveland had its run against Golden State. Memphis had its run against Golden State. That was it. A couple teams gave themselves a shot, but nobody even pushed into a game 7. Spurs last year in the first round when they won the title. So 2 years ago, I guess, technically. First round against the Mavs, they were pushed to Game 7. Then they went on to cruise against every other team. But at least they were pushed to a Game 7. Golden State wasn't pushed to a Game 7 last year. Is Dallas doing that next year? No. New Orleans, they've got all their bigs back. They're not pushing Golden State to a 7-game series. It's not happening. Oklahoma City, that can be interesting. I think Houston, San Antonio, OKC, in some order, make up 2-3-4 next year in the West. But I still like Golden State over OKC. Oklahoma City is going to be a dangerous team. Especially when you have rumors about Durant leaving. They're going to be... They're a really strong team. In my opinion, they could use another offensive threat. Brooke, you got Durant. Kanter's okay offensively. He's fine. He's good. Ibaka's good, but he's not a scorer. Kanter's not a scorer. You got Westbrook Durant. Defensively, they'll be good. But again, I still favor Golden State. Then you get teams like Phoenix. Pushing Golden State? No. Then you got the crap. Then you got Utah, you got Denver, Sacramento, Lakers, Minnesota. Lakers add Lou Williams, 3 years, $21 million. That's cool, sixth man of the year. It's a nice add for $7 million a year. They're going to get Roy Hibbert. It's just a matter of how. They're going to get Brandon Bass from the Celtics. He's okay. But, you know, yeah, Phoenix adds Tyson Chandler, but let's be real here. Adding Tyson Chandler to that team, maybe they're a playoff team now. That's cool. But, again, you're not pushing Golden State in a 7-game series. Memphis adds Brendan Wright. OKC adds Kyle Singler. You know, those teams aren't getting much better. Obviously, OKC will be a different team next year because of the injuries that they suffered this past year. But, again, OKC, San Antonio, Houston, those teams will make up 2-3-4 in the West in some order. Houston, keeping Corey Brewer, keeping Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley for $6 million a year, that's an awesome deal. A great defensive point guard. I love that. I love that deal. Corey Brewer, $8 million a year. That's fine. Houston's not going anywhere, basically, is what that means. They'll be just fine. They'll, again, be a really good team. And I don't love James Harden, but they'll still be a really good team. Now, San Antonio. That's the remainder of my show on. It's only 5 minutes, so I apologize. But San Antonio, you add LaMarcus Aldridge. And I'll probably get more into LaMarcus Aldridge in a later show. But I think it was the perfect fit for him. He's going back to the state of Texas. That's where he wants to play. He's going to an unbelievable organization. He's going to be essentially replacing Tim Duncan. They just locked up Danny Green for the next 4 years. You got a 40% three-point shooter around him. Just locked up Kawhi Leonard for 5 years. Both really good deals in retrospect, cap-wise. Kawhi Leonard, $18 million a year. That's going to look like a joke in 2 years. This next season, is he worth 18? Sure. 2 years from now, 18 compared to $90 million when you have that kind of money spent, that's going to look great. That's a fifth of your cap going to your, 1A, 1B player alongside LaMarcus Aldridge. That was a great deal by San Antonio. Awesome deal. They're set to compete next year. the problem I have with San Antonio is that Tony Parker got worse last year. He has definitely lost a step, and he's not the player he once was, for sure. Manu Ginobili, he's old. And I know that the Spurs always get called old, but Ginobili is not a true difference maker like he was. He's still a good player. He can still make plays. But honestly, he's not the player he once was. I know the Spurs always get called too old. I'm not saying they can't beat Golden State. I think they're the legitimate threat to do it. Parker got worse last year. Injuries are starting to become a problem. Tim Duncan's going to be a Greg Monroe-type player in the postseason, where he'll average 16 in that. Tim Duncan's just fine. He'll be really good again. Manu Ginobili is not really good anymore. I think he's good. I think he's above average. I think he helps your team. I think Tony Parker is above average. He helps your team. He's a good player. But he's not great like he was. Even 2 years ago, in that run that they had, he was great. Against going up against the Heat, that entire postseason run, he was great. The Spurs were unbeatable outside of the first round. Like I mentioned, they got pushed to 7 games. That was their hardest series. That was an unbelievable team. Manu was still a difference maker. Tony Parker was still a difference maker. I don't think those two guys are true difference makers anymore. That's the only problem I have with the Spurs. I'm not saying they're too old, but they are. Those two players are past their primes in terms of making a difference in the postseason. They still will, but not to the same impact that they had even 2 seasons ago. I love San Antonio next year. I think they're going to be a phenomenal team. I think they'll be the third best team in the league. But I still like Golden State over them. You add LaMarcus Aldridge, it's going to take a year for him to adjust. Tony Parker, not the same level type of player he was. Neither is Manu. Danny Green will be great. They're trying to get David West. If they can get David West, they'll do it. If David West is your big coming off the bench, that's insane. You're starting LaMarcus and Timmy Duncan, and you got David West coming off the bench, that'll work if you're San Antonio. They'll have an advantage inside against Golden State, if that's what it comes down to, in the Western Conference Finals, which I think ultimately it will if it can happen seeding-wise, as long as they're not like the 4 and Golden State's the 1. But if they do meet Golden State, it'll be a great series. But the Houston stayed the same. I think they'll be a great team next year. Superstar-level team, championship winner, no. But I think they'll be great. And the same goes for San Antonio. Clippers, I think, got worse. Portland definitely got worse, didn't get better. Dallas didn't get better, maybe slightly, but not enough to push Golden State. OKC will be that other team that can push Golden State. I still see Cleveland and Golden State as the favorites, but OKC and San Antonio are the only real threats to Golden State next season. I don't think any other team in the West got better. If Dallas did, it was very marginal. I've got no time left. Thanks for listening, as always.